in my brief today, in Aboriginal Studies, was to talk about some of the ways I go and plan, deliver and evaluate Aboriginal Studies. And to negotiate that, first and foremost, is to acknowledge that one... on Warringu, which is Sijinaway. My grandfather came from Coonabah through the assimilation policy, was moved to Point Pierce, which is Noongar country. And as you know, the buckskin mob mostly reside in Kaurna country now. Got exempt to move off the mission, and Uncle Peter and Auntie Pat Buckskin are all sort of living and working, breathing on Kaurna country. So to establish where my cultural heritage and my identity lie is probably the first and foremost respect I can give to Aboriginal Studies. After studying for 10 years and having children and probably some bad relationships, I had to escape Kaurna country and move to Dharawal. And there's certain ethics and politics and considerations and cultural sensitivities when you're a Warringu Indigenous woman working on somebody else's national country. And that's first and foremost where I start when I plan, deliver and work. So as part of getting my cultural protocols and cultural sensitivities right, in 2003, I was privileged to get a position as an academic in the Indigenous Studies unit there. And as part of the process of that, what I did was straight away form relationships with local custodians. And with that, what we did is, and what I really wanted from the local custodians, is how do you teach respectfully, ethically, and with some sort of competence about country in the Dharawal Nation, which extends from Lapa, La Perouse, which is Sydney, right down to the Victorian border, Eden. So it's a Dharawal Nation, but within that, so in Wollongong, there is the Wadi Wadi, is the local language group, and there are several. So we worked extensively with the local custodians and came up with, what academics call, is a standpoint theory on what cultural custodians, how they view, live and see their country. And a couple of the key frameworks that I always work from and which sort of forms a framework and a definition for how I work in Aboriginal Studies is their worldviews, which are universal, include country, kinship, journey, connectedness, and of course their Altaringa, which is the local word for their dreaming worldviews and their spirituality. So that sort of framework in terms of planning, whatever I do in Aboriginal Studies stems from working and defining myself and being culturally competent on Dharawal Nation. So working from the framework, and of course as a Warringu woman, these are universal concepts as Indigenous people we can certainly think from, but they are different. Aboriginality is not homogenous. We are all different. And concepts of country for South Coast mob include lots of journeying up and down the south coast. There's lots of middens, sacred sites, ceremonial grounds, and lots of events that happen pre-colonial times and post-colonial times. So the journeying and the connections, the kinship ties, are all really, really prevalent to this country, while individual language groups have their certain spiritual worldviews and definitions of their country. So although Dharawal country is quite diverse, it's also quite large language group that essentially teaching in Indigenous studies as a Wurundjeri woman is quite a challenge, and it's taken me 10 years to negotiate that. So 10 years of working with people and not for informal relationships. It's turning up to your local Aboriginal education consultative groups. It's showing respect and being inclusive of your local elders. It's negotiating across those factions. So in Wollongong itself, there are five factional registered traditional owner groups, and they're all at war like we all are, and all have our own political worldviews. And so what we've got to do, and what I do so sensitively and try to, is work across those factions all the time. Lucky for me, I've got a little bit of space because I don't have kinship connections and I don't have to factionalise myself. I sit outside of that. So working across those factions and with those elders and with key stakeholders in those communities has been integral to even beginning to plan and think in a culturally competent way about planning and teaching Aboriginal studies. And then I'll just talk about a couple of key programs. Sorry, it's not all academically rigorous, but I just thought I'll just try and look it over here now, show you how that may be applied. So as a researcher, I've made some key decisions about and I think they stem culturally. If I'm living, breathing, loving, educating, raising my children on Dharawal country, then there's that sort of nuppity-nuppity approach of giving and taking. So what I do as a researcher is I research within that language group, or within the nation, especially within Dharawal Nation. So in terms of that, I've made that as a conscious decision. some projects that I'm working on are with local educationalists, Aboriginal youth, and pre-service teachers. So I'll just use these three examples of how that sort of gets embedded into my practical work. I guess one of the ways in which universities have is, as academics and researchers, we have the capacity to demonstrate some leadership. So we're paid to collate research, analyse it, and make it measurable, whatever you say there. But so what I've done is work with local AECGs. Local Aboriginal Lands Councils, especially in New South Wales, because of they're usually, Lands Council members are usually custodians with, you know, masses of knowledge of culture and heritage. So we're working with local communities, non-Aboriginal teachers, local key stakeholders, and what we've done is collated resources for teachers that have been published and written by local custodians, knowledge, stories, oral histories, key dynamic educationalists, and we've compiled a local language, a local website for our teachers, so that when non-Aboriginal teachers, as you say, come into the classroom space, they're often apprehensive, often nervous. And me, even as an Indigenous person going into someone else's country, took 10 years to develop, you know, some cultural competence. So what we've done is got them an online resource of specific local knowledge. So we've worked with the local language consultants, we've got collated the local research, and also within that identified what else, what the gaps are. There needs to be more children's stories. There needs to be more stories told around Dharawal's country framework. So again, using Waikani Dai does, using technology and Facebook and online blogging, we've made sure that local teachers have access to local knowledges, and that's been a real success. And we also highlight our exemplary non-Indigenous teachers who walk beside us. So I wrote an online blog around what white brothers do, their amazing work that they do when working with Aboriginal communities and Aboriginal kids, so that we can share that knowledge and other people have access to their curriculum and pedagogical approaches. So keeping it sort of practical. The second example is I work with local Aboriginal youth who are gifted and talented in the arts and the performing arts, and we run a youth program through the university looking at ways in which we can, you know, think about youth transition. And yes, we do talk about Aboriginal youth as a disadvantaged group, but we've also got to think about leadership, which was said several times when Uncle Ian was talking this morning. You know, we've got to identify who our leaders are in that 12 to 24 age group. We have a phenomenal youth population. So we've identified them, we bring them into the university, and through local culture, language consultants, using the performing arts of story, dance and singing, we build their leadership capacity and do our, you know, NAIDOC performances and stuff, drawing on our resources. So they sing songs from Brand New Day, I Wish I Was an Aborigine, that one. Our beautiful Sapphires, all that soul music, they're learning all of that. They write their own songs in language, and they do all that sort of performing arts. And they have a big profile. They're called the Illawarra Flame Trees, which is a local beautiful tree which was logged so heavily in the early 1900s, and our escarpment in Wollongong was full of beautiful red flame trees, and they're all gone. So through culture, heritage, the arts, we work with Aboriginal youth, and they start to begin to get some ownership and some support through not just mentors, because it's got to be more than just mentoring. You know, we do mentor these youth, but you've got to work with youth in ways that they develop leadership capacity. It's a really tricky thing. And we've got to lift them up to make those decisions and not be so adult-centric with them. Aboriginal youth are so amazing young group, and it's so sad with that. They are so stereotyped. And it's those kids who have had the hardest lives who are the most dynamic and most creative in terms of poetry, singing and dancing. Amazing. And then the last thing I do, and thank God it's not mandatory Aboriginal studies, I work with selected teachers each year who get selected to do a scholarship for 12 months for 12 months through the DECT, New South Wales DET. And they come into a program at the university campus where I mentor them in local cultural immersion programs. So over the whole year, they go and do internships at schools with high Aboriginal populations. They're urban kids. They get sent to Barorana or Walgett, and they get that experience of what is the reality of teaching in these schools. And throughout the whole year, the local Wollongong community are equal partners in the learning process